The weather is warming up and everyone is anxious to get outside. I'm Jill Harrington for Help Save the Next Girl Foundation. While days are bright and nights are warm, we believe you should go out and have fun, but also have a plan. Buddy up. Go with friends. Stay with people you know and trust. Pay attention to your surroundings. These are simple things you can do to make sure that you and your friends enjoy yourselves and stay safe. For more information or to get involved, visit HelpSaveTheNextGirl.com.
Welcome to ACC Nation Podcast, Episode 60. The crew today, Chris Bond in Tampa, Will Ogenen in Minneapolis, and I'm Jim Quist in Richmond. Virginia is the favorite once again for the ACC Rowing Championship. That's coming up on Sunday. Lake Hartwell, Clemson. The Cavaliers have strong competition this year from Syracuse and Duke. All of the events of the championship will be streamed live by ACC Network Extra. And it can also be accessed through the Watch ESPN app. Six ACC women's lacrosse programs were among the 26 selected to compete in the 2017 NCAA Division I Women's Lacrosse Championship. They include Boston College, Louisville, North Carolina, Notre Dame, Syracuse, and Virginia. Duke, North Carolina, Notre Dame, and Syracuse, those are the four men's lacrosse programs that are among the 17 selected to compete in the Men's Lacrosse Championship. Florida State earned the top seed for the 2017 ACC Softball Championship. That's taking place Thursday the 11th through Saturday the 13th. Speaking of Florida State, I hope you guys watch this game. This is absolutely a barn burner. It didn't end up the way we wanted it to, but nonetheless, it was fun to watch. Florida State battled their way into the Contenders Semifinals in the NCAA Beach Volleyball Semifinals. I just repeated myself there, but fell to Hawaii 3-2, an amazing performance that kept sliding back and forth between the two teams. USC, they took the national championship once again this year. The NCAA Men's and Women's Tennis Championships get underway this week. We'll have a rundown of the teams, individuals, and doubles pairings at accnation.net. And NCBWA Baseball Rankings. Well, let's jump right into this. Let's start out with Chris. Pretty much everybody's kind of sitting still because there's not a lot of action going on. But nonetheless, ACC looks pretty good in the in basically this is the last rankings to come out. And so we're going to start with the rankings and delve right into what's coming up with the ACC championship.
Well, Jim, Louisville's still at number 2, UNC at 3, Clemson at 7, Virginia 8, Wake Forest 19. Florida State somehow is still getting votes. I'm not sure even, I'm only slightly surprised by that. But
they're getting that SEC football treatment.
Oh,
man.
Got you digging.
I mean, it's not really a dig, but maybe that's why it is.
Well, it's street credentials, I guess. Yeah. But
that's my point, basically.
I see. Oh, okay. So you were actually being kind of kind.
I was being complimentary.
It was a backhanded compliment, though. At least it felt that way to me. I don't know. Yeah. I think my head did a 180.
Everything is cold in Minnesota, including compliments.
No.
Yeah. Jim, you said your head did a 180. Are you the exorcist?
It's not back around yet, trust me. It's only going part
Watch
of the way.
Watch out for the pea soup.
Indeed. Well, let's talk a little bit about this this layout. 40% of the top 10 in the nation, ACC teams. And Wake Forest, not looking bad, coming on really strong. We talked about that last time. And Florida State, of course, we'll just scratch our heads over that and keep thinking up really good backhanded compliments. Will, you just keep working on them.
Well, there's certainly opportunity for movement after this week, though, because Louisville has just actually started a three-game set in South Bend to Notre Dame's at 23-23 this year, a pedestrian record. But they're 14-4 at home this year. So it'll be interesting to see how that holds up to the number 2 team in the country visiting them.
So and that one, you're putting a jinx on Louisville is what you're saying. You're saying,
no, I wouldn't dream of it.
No. wouldn't. All right. Well, that's very nice of you.
Well, there's that. And following whatever happens there in South Bend, what's coming is a trip to Clemson. So got a 3-game set down there in Western South Carolina. So number 2 and number 7 going at it. Somebody's got to lose 2 out of 3. So there's certainly a chance for some movement for rankings after this weekend coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that. I haven't seen any kind of slipping on the part of Louisville, but you know, it's like you just put the curse on them with that conversation about heading to play the Irish. So
really, I didn't know how that had that much power. There's a few other curses I like to lay out there.
Yeah, I bet there is. that Clemson series, that could be interesting. That has some potential there, but I still think Louisville's got a really stacked deck. So,
well, here's something to look at there. Brandon McKay, ho-hum, just won another pitcher of the week.
Yeah.
6th of the year, you know, and that's 7 award individual awards this year in the league, by the way. That ties a record. I mentioned earlier how Seth Beer bats 500 against McKay, mm-hmm. Career-wise, and actually, last couple of weeks, Seth Beer is really just slumping. He's only batting 280, which is badly bad for him.
Yeah,
he might be thinking, "Oh, goody, McKay's coming back. I'll get right out of this." So.
Yeah, that's what everybody thinks when they know Brendan's coming to town. Yeah,
well, he might be the one hitter that can say that too.
That's true. You know, statistically speaking, I'm sure that makes a lot of sense in somebody's warped mind, but speaking of which, Will.
Exit stage left.
Well, you know, it's a day of compliments and whatnot. So talk to us a little bit about ACC baseball as we get ready to go into the championship at Louisville, by the way. And, you know, where you see some of these folks going when it comes to the road to Omaha.
Mm-hmm. Well, first off, I want to just say, do we just go ahead and give Brendan McKay the ACC Player of the Year? Because you look at his accomplishments in terms of league rankings, 4th in the ACC in batting average at 389. He's tied for 3rd in home runs at 15. And he's also tied for 3rd in wins. 2nd in ERA at 1.92. Leads the ACC in strikeouts with 103. And also is 4th in innings pitched at 75.
So slacker. This,
yeah. Yeah. He definitely can do it all. And talking about Louisville for a second there, they have the second lowest team ERA in all of the NCAA at 2.61, which I mean, Oregon State is they're number one in the country, and they're number one in this category too. They have a team ERA below 2 at 1.99. So it tells you just how far away, you know, Oregon State is compared to the rest of the field. But say Louisville has an excellent pitching staff, and we can't rule out North Carolina either. They have a 2.64 team ERA, which is just 2 spots behind Louisville. And Clemson's in the top 10 too. They have a team ERA of 3.11, which is nothing to nothing. It's not too bad, really. Like standings wise, obviously we mentioned just how great Louisville and Clemson have been. North Carolina as well. Louisville's at 42-6 on the season. North Carolina 37-9. Clemson's in at 35-12. But I still feel like Wake Forest is not getting the credit they deserve in the polls. They are putting out an excellent season. They're 15-9 in the conference and 32-14 overall. And how they're barely like in the top 20 is a little bit of a surprise to me. But maybe they just don't have the name cachet that some schools get, but I think they're a much better team than that ranking indicates. But I would also say Virginia might be a little bit a little too high when you look at it. Yes, they're 36-11, but they're 14-10 in the conference, which means that they're 22-1 in non-conference. But if you look at the schedule they played outside of the conference, it's not exactly been a murderer's row of teams. I mean, you're playing a lot of the in-state schools like the James Madisons and the Longwoods and the Richmonds and the JMUs of the world, who are not exactly top-flight baseball teams, even though, you know, Longwood is not a bad team. I just like to say that because I grew
It's
up near Long. It's yeah,
hometown.
I for those of you who don't know, I grew up near Longwood's campus in Farmville. So I there's where that's where my ACC fandom comes into play up here in Minnesota. But yeah, that's I'm really excited to see what McKay can do. Like I've said on previous podcasts, he's definitely in the mix to be the top overall pick of the MLB draft. But you know, we have only a couple weeks left in the season, so I mean, like Chris said, there's a lot at stake in these closing series and some very good matchups. And I know he'd mentioned the other one. I know Virginia has a three-gamer with Miami and Charlottesville this coming weekend that I think Virginia has a real good shot of winning. They're obviously an excellent hitting team. They're in the top 10 in the country in terms of team batting average. They're obviously an excellent hitting team. That's the one thing that tends to get them is their pitching is can be very up and down at times. But if against a team like Miami who struggles to hit, I think this is an opportunity for Virginia to solidify second place in the Coastal.
Will, I think you're the day three starter, aren't you?
I am. I thank you for mentioning that. I will be starting Sunday, on the Sunday game in Charlottesville as one of the oldest players in Division One at the ripe old age of 35. I'm just kidding.
Okay. Well, cheers to you
But
there, buddy.
don't feel bad. Jim's batting cleanup, so.
Well, that just took away the oldest player
Yeah.
honors. So,
And
let me
triplicate.
have my moment, Chris.
It took away. Yeah, Jim just beat you in triplicate, so.
It was short and sweet, wasn't it? And by the way, being at Longwood is in Farmville. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Farmville. And you thought it was only on Facebook. And it explains an awful lot, if you've ever played Farmville, why Will is the way he is.
No,
So.
seriously, when I've explained to people where I come from, they're like, "Oh, you mean the Facebook game? No."
Yeah, he's. I love
Actually, they
that.
do believe
I
it.
love
Well,
that.
never mind.
You
That's
are.
where I mean, I didn't. I went to high school in Farmville, and I know, I grew up in a smaller town, that's nearby. But I just say Farmville because that's the biggest town in the area.
That's the metropolis right next to Crewe.
Yep. Farm Vegas, baby.
Yeah, Farm Vegas. It's a very lovely community. Really nice. Kind of isolated from the rest of the state, but it's still nice place. So, out of all of these teams, and I know that, I keep checking back. Road to Omaha, because that's going to be repeated over and over in the next few weeks. Who has the best shot? And I think last week you guys were pretty much saying Louisville and North Carolina are the two top teams to watch. You still on board with that thought? And do you think either Clemson, Virginia, Wake Forest, or maybe even Florida State, for that matter, if they can pull something out at the last moment, have a shot at making it?
Well, it's in baseball, great pitching trumps great hitting most of the time. And you look at the aforementioned ERAs from Louisville and UNC, boy, it's tough to bet against them. When you get great pitching right down the line, it doesn't stop a Brendan McKay up in Louisville. It really doesn't. That's a team average, which means they're all doing it. They got arms galore there on the South Shore of the Ohio. And UNC's right behind them. They might have the best closer in the league. But you know what? You say that, I got to tell you, I wouldn't be surprised if Wake Forest makes a run in the ACC tournament. You look at Sheets hitting 364 and six RBIs this past weekend. Has a team there in Wake Forest. Their pitching is pedestrian, but they rarely go through the starting nine without getting a hit. And they'll just pepper you. There's not even a lot of power in the lineup, but they will just peck and peck you to death. And next thing you know, you've given up 17, 18 hits. You may not have given up a home run, but you've just been you're wearing out the scoreboard on the hitting. And if they find a way to crack through either one in North Carolina or Louisville in the ACC tournament, watch out.
Well, it's going to be an interesting tournament. I think it's really lining up that way. I have really big questions about Virginia, and I think that Will, you probably hit it on the head there, considering who they've played in conference, out of conference record. But Louisville, North Carolina, Clemson, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what's going on there. They're doing okay, but they're not as dominant. Wake Forest, yeah, I can see them sneaking up on you. Let me just say right now, I like to hold out hope for everybody. I don't think Florida State's going anywhere, so I think that's a reality check. They just had a bad season.
I have to second that.
You know, it's a shame. On a lot of levels, that's a shame. I would have really liked to have seen them pull it together and be in that top 20 consistently, but I just don't think things are clicking, and I don't think it's going to change.
No, the confidence just isn't there in the dugout in Tallahassee. And it's a rare place for Mike Morton to find himself, but whatever's happening going on, if it mystifies him after 35 years of coaching, you'd be hard pressed to find somebody who could figure it out.
Yeah, it happens sometimes, you know. I mean, it's just when you think you've got that perfect storm, so to speak, and you go, I've got the players, I've got the pitching, I've got the hitting, you know, everything is coming together, it looks good, and then something, and you can't put your finger on it. Just it lets the air out of the tires, and that's what happened. They've just never been able to reinflate the tires on that car. Not at all. Well, the clock's ticking, and we're getting closer and closer to that championship in Louisville. That will be a very, very interesting, entertaining. It's something I'm going to be watching. Coming up in the next few weeks, we're going to be taking a look at preseason soccer picks in the ACC. A lot of loaded teams and superb recruits coming on board this season. Yeah, that's not that far away. Fall is just sort of lurking in the corner. The NBA draft isn't that far away either. We'll be talking with the X's and O's X-Man, DC's Xavion, about ACC players who dipped their toes into the water and some who didn't, and his thoughts on that. I was talking with him this past week about basketball, and he had some very interesting thoughts that he'll share with us in the coming weeks. I'm sure we've missed someone somewhere, but it looks like all of the ACC football players who went into the NFL draft have been picked up in free agency. Am I right along that line, guys, or did I miss somebody?
I believe everyone that of consequence that is it was, and I know Gerard Evans finally went to Philadelphia.
Right, right.
I think that was the big one we were waiting on.
Yeah. They've all got a very hard road in front of them. They've got to do a lot of adjusting from college pace and college mentality and sometimes really high school mentality in some people's instances. Moving into that NFL speed trap and seeing if they can make it. Next couple of weeks is really going to be challenging. These guys are facing a lot of physical and mental toughness, and we'll see whether or not they've got what it takes to make it in the NFL or to head to the Canadian Football League or maybe just hope they got enough college under their belts and or maybe even go back, but not
Well, the advantage obviously being a higher draft pick is you're getting more money invested to you, so you're getting a little more leeway and more time and more more of a little more of a leash to get up to speed. Mm-hmm. Whereas you're an undrafted free agent, there is no room for wiggle there. Evans has a reasonable shot there. I mean, obviously they have a quarterback in Philadelphia right now in Wentz, but trying to make the rosters a second and third stream, he has a reasonable shot at doing it. But mm-hmm. Being a rookie and you're usually competing against three or four veterans for the same spot, it's a tough road. And a lot of these guys will probably, if not there, be looking at Canadian League or moving on to regular jobs in the real sector. But I don't know how else to say it, but I was once told by a man who made it in the NFL that you have as much chance of getting to the NFL out of college as you do of walking through a jungle without getting bitten by a mosquito. It's possible, but it's hard, and there's so many guys you're going up against for one spot. And we'll see it. You have to look at where they're signing, what they do, and what kind of competition you're gonna be facing when they get in. Evans, I think, has a decent shot of making the team in Philadelphia, though.
Mm-hmm. I still will go back to what I said in the last episode. I think that he's one of those players that should be used in some other capacity. He'd be a practice squad quarterback at best, in my opinion. But I think he has potential to be either a he's not the fastest guy in the world, but he's not slow. But he would make an interesting conversion to a wide receiver or maybe even a tight end. If you put a little more weight on him, but he's a big guy, you know. So think about the option there of having somebody with that talent, who does know how to scramble, who knows how to, knows what to look for, right? And as an option, bring him around and do a nice little flea flicker or something with him. So, he's got potential. I'm just saying. Those are the sort of things that you look at. When you look at players like that, you go, what can I use this guy for? I need to use him for multiple things in order for him to make the team. So we'll see where that goes. Now, Bulware, where did he go?
I was expecting he was either going to sign somebody, or I figured we'd see him in about 2022 as the WWE champion.
Well, hey, some stranger things have occurred, so, yeah.
I mean, hey, he wouldn't be the first, but he's with the Carolina Panthers.
Okay, that's what I thought. I thought he stayed close to home. And it'll be interesting to see how he does, because he's a tweener. But it sure seems to me like the NFL is using a lot of tweeners these days. You just use what you got, right? Mm-hmm. So...
And get those athletes on the field is what it is.
Yeah. You've got somebody who can perform and deliver. Sometimes it doesn't really make that much difference how big they are. Like they can be a 5'6" running back in the NFL. So I'm just really wondering how that's going to work out.
Worked out for Darren Sproles.
Yeah, I was just going to make that mention, Chris. Good call.
Yeah, it did. We'll see if it does the same thing for this young man that I'm referencing. Let's just real briefly here, guys, since I brought up college football and it's something that we find it hard to get away from, any thoughts there on how the football teams are going to, round it out this fall?
Well, I was looking at some of the new kids, the early enrollees that showed up on campus. And there were three that really stood out to me. Michael Carter, running back there at UNC, had 5 yards carry in the spring game. He got about 12 carries, which is more than Elijah Hood had to be somewhere going, wait, what? I was getting 12 yards to carry against South Carolina, but he's more of the scat back type. Carter is, but he'll be a hard guy to see coming out of the backfield. And when he hits that second level, he's got an extra gear, not quite like a Dalvin Cook extra gear, But if you don't catch him when you get past the line, he's a guy who can really make you pay. Another one that really jumped out at me was Des Fitzpatrick, a receiver up in Louisville, who I think Petrino is going to be throwing to a lot. He had 9 receptions, 180 yards in the spring game, 2 touchdowns. He's tall, lanky, and he covers a lot of ground with his long strides. He's a guy I really want to watch here this coming fall to see how he does against some more veteran defensive backs in the ACC. And then, of course, there's Cam Akers at Florida State, which I'm just going to tell people, go pull up YouTube videos. That's all I'm going to tell you.
All right.
He's like a half step slower than Dalvin Cook with a lot more power. He is ready. He's ready. And he'll have to be because the first game is Alabama. So it'll be interesting to see how ready this kid is when he hits that front seven.
Yeah, welcome to college football, kid.
But I'll tell you this, so he already set the freshman bench pressing record at the school. So, and that's including a lot of great defensive offensive linemen to come through that college. And he's only a running back.
Any thoughts from you, Will, on spring football and where ACC football is headed this fall?
Even though I think they'll finish fourth in the Atlantic, I really like Wake Forest this year. Even though they lost their defensive coordinator, he's no longer there, but I still think their defense is going to be really good. And I think the big thing is getting a competent quarterback back. I mean, Kendall Hinton most of the season last year with an injury, but with him back and most likely taking over the starting role, I think he is an excellent fit for the Claw offense. And their team, I think you should be on the lookout for this year. I think right now I'm really ready to say the Coastal is wide open. So I think pretty much every team in the Coastal has a huge flaw to it. You look at Virginia Tech with its quarterback situation. We don't know how that's going to play out, even though I think they will have a top 10 defense this year. Miami, you know, they're replacing so many skill position players. You know, how is that all going to play out? We have North Carolina, obviously. Mitchell Trubisky is no longer there. So we'll see how the quarterback situation plays out there. I mean, you're replacing a quarterback in Georgia Tech, but I think they're going to be still going to be a good team with a running game. Duke, we've been really high on their quarterback. I think they're going to be a step better this year. I think they can make a bowl this year. I have no idea what to think about Virginia. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you right now. I think they're going to have an excellent back half of the defense. I think they're going to have some excellent linebackers, and Micah Kizer being back plus Quinn Blanding, I think they're going to be two of the captains of the team. But there's so many questions everywhere else. Quarterback, they did solve the running back situation in spring. Between Jordan Ellis and Daniel Hamm, they're going to be really good. No, nobody's going to be Taquan Mizell, but I think between the two, they're going to be doing a lot. But like I said, they have questions everywhere else. Receiver, offensive line, defensive line, there's just no depth on either side. So if somehow we go into the season, Virginia has injuries in the trenches, and they're going to be hurting pretty badly.
I have two teams I want you guys to remember. And in much the same way that I discussed women's basketball, Duke. Keep an eye on Duke this season.
That's not going to work a second time. I'm kidding.
I do like them this year.
Yeah, I do too.
I think they're a bowl team this year. Definitely. They could be a contender, but I think for sure a bowl team.
And here's the other team I want you to keep an eye on, and everyone's going to poo-poo me on this one. Boston College. Do not look away. I think you're going to be surprised by what hits the field this fall.
Well, they're going to have a little more punch in offense, and the defense is still going to keep them in the game. So they went 6-6 before the bowl game this past year, and we still don't know how they did it. But they're going to have a little more pep in the offense, and the defense will still be stout. I wanted to visit right back there what Will was talking about, North Carolina, and you're saying that Miami was placing skill positions. I think it's the same thing with North Carolina, only it's worse. a guy like a Switzer is really, you don't replace a guy like that.
He is such a dangerous weapon in the receiving game and especially in the returning game.
Yeah, it's maybe you could. Yeah, it's who the argument would be who you're going to miss more, him or Trubisky, because Switzer did so much, not just in offense, but also in the return game as well. So dangerous. But and Virginia, I'm going to piggyback on Will on that there. I don't even know if Virginia will win any more games than they will last year. But the defense, it's arguable, but what I definitely think is not debatable is they will definitely be closer in games this year. The defense will be better.
Well, let's take a look at Virginia for just a second. What was their largest margin of loss?
Was it the Virginia Tech game?
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's just we'll throw that one out because that's sort of from a statistical standpoint that it's an anomaly for me. Okay. I mean, it's an in-state, it's a rivalry, it's the end of the season, blah, 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 right? Okay. Mm-hmm. But let's take the rest of the season. How close were they in most of those games?
Let's see. Their two score losses were to Richmond, mm-hmm. Oregon. They had the missed field goal at the end of the game against UConn, lost by two touchdowns to Pitt, got blown out by Carolina. Lost on that late touchdown against Louisville, lost by 7 to Wake, lost by 20 to Miami, and lost by 14 to Georgia Tech.
Now that's really not bad considering. Mm-hmm. So now if you take that scenario, look at what they had, what they didn't have, first year coach there, new programs, etc. Now we've got another year under our belt. Got returning players, we've got recruits. I think you might be a little more surprised by Virginia this year than, well, you'll be pleasantly surprised.
So. I think with those scores, I think they will improve by one score, so to speak, by 3 to 7 points better each game this year. That's what I think.
The thing that might help them a little bit is they do have their schedule is a little different this year. I mean, they, especially in the non-conference, they don't have anybody on the caliber of Oregon like they play, even though Oregon turned out to be a bad team, but they didn't have, they didn't have a team that would blow them away. I mean, they could this year. I mean, their non-con is William & Mary, Indiana, UConn, and Boise State. I mean, Boise State will probably blow them out since that game is in Boise, but
right,
they could easily win all three of those games, those other games. UConn's got a coaching change. Indiana's going through a coaching change. And yep. William & Mary,
William & Mary might be the biggest threat.
Well,
let's just say this right here. If Virginia loses opening day to William & Mary, there is going to be a lot of upset fans in Charlottesville losing to an FCS school two years in a row.
But they are a top 20 ranked FCS school, and they have been perennially there for the last years.
And they beat Virginia before, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean, they're not an easy win. By no stretch of the imagination are they an easy win. You know, it'd be like going over the mountain and hitting up James Madison. You know,
yeah,
that's the sort of stuff. You know, James Madison, William & Mary, Richmond, those teams are killer. They're not pushovers, and I hate to discount FCS teams at all. I just can't imagine doing it if you look past them and you poo poo them and you say it's William & Mary. Or it's Richmond, or it's James Madison. That's a surefire sign you're going to get your butt kicked on the field.
Yeah,
that's what you got to be careful of, because those teams, they've got a lot of great players, great programs. No, they're not that top echelon, and of course Virginia isn't quite there yet. But
mm-hmm.
I don't see them losing to William & Mary in that opening game. I don't see it. I think you're going to see a whole new team.
Yeah, I don't see Thomas Jefferson's alma mater beating the school that he opened. So I just don't see that.
Well, We shall see. Well, you're really going back in history here, aren't you?
Hey, but I do see Thomas Jefferson's nephew's school beating up Thomas Jefferson's school that he started. So.
Gee whiz.
Upstart nephews.
Upstarts, for sure. Well, guys, any final thoughts? Will, you first.
One thing we didn't touch on is Leonard Hamilton getting a contract extension at Florida State, you know, adding on a couple more years to his current deal. And, you know, in reality, it is the right move for him. I mean, I know he's, you know, approaching 70, but, you know, he's recruiting at a very high level. Obviously, we've seen what he's been able to do the last couple of years, getting some one and dones and getting, you know, a couple players to leave after the sophomore year. And this team, you know, he's done some excellent work, as you know, we've outlined between Chris and I, and obviously Jim too. But we've outlined just how difficult, you know, a job that Florida State basketball is when you look at the facilities, and you know, it's not exactly a high level basketball school, even though over the years it has produced some pretty good players. You know, going back to the days of Bob Sura and Sam Cassell, but.
Don't forget Charlie Ward.
Yep. Charlie Ward, who was excellent at both. I mean, he was such an excellent athlete back in his day, let's be real. But I just want to say it was the right move, and I'm applauding him. And I know there's probably FSU fans who are probably upset that they do that. But it's like we always say, you know, you can get rid of somebody, but who are you going to find that's better?
Yeah. I think it was a great move. I think he's brought the program along a long way. The AD obviously felt like they were going in the right direction. His comments were very positive, and certainly indicated to me that he was being realistic about where the program has come from and what Leonard has done for that team. I'll just put 70 to you this way, Will. You're halfway there. Okay, think about that for a second.
Whoa,
I mean, you know.
Living on a prayer.
Oh, man.
There's your bon Jovi.
Well, everybody just turned off.
Yep, I don't blame them.
Well, I'll tell you what. 70 literally is a young age for most of these guys who are coaching. It used to be, you know, when you hit that 65, 70, early 70 thing, you'd be thinking, well, you know, he's out the door. Look over at Krzyzewski, you know, it's just all these guys are going on up. And, you know, even though they're going, you know, Krzyzewski and of course, Roy is having surgery and stuff like that, but that's not too uncommon for guys like that. But, you know, I can see those guys being around for another 5-10 years easily without any problem. It's when you start pushing, and here's a reality check, when you start pushing that upper 70s and 80s, then you have to be really sharp to make that happen. Because coaching takes a lot out of people. It really does. It's a lot of work. Chris, your thoughts?
Well, I was going to add into that there, Will, and I want to tell you that flattery will get you somewhere. So excellent work on there. Just a little piggyback on that before I get to my thought. Hamilton doesn't own the high point of the program. That belongs to Hugh Durham, who coached the 72 team to the final, where they did what everybody else did at the time, lose to UCLA. And he certainly doesn't belong any of the low points. It had some great years in the early 90s under Pat Kennedy. Some aforementioned players there, but Hamilton in many ways is the father of FSU basketball, in the sense he has provided its stability. It's been up and down over the years. It has really had some low points. Hamilton has given us Florida State fans a program we can hang our hat on, and some great players to cheer on. And so the recruiting classes have just picked up astronomically the last 2 or 3 years as the facilities. There is money being put into it, and the recruiting has responded with that. And it's finally about time to give Coach Ham some help bringing in some better players, because his record certainly proves the quality of coach that he is in this league. But getting on to my point, enough accolades for Will for bringing up a good point already. Last couple weeks I've been in a bad mood. A sour mood.
Sour?
a surly mood.
Surly mood. Here it comes.
Well, you know, I one of the beers I tried a couple years ago, Will, Jim, and I met in Charlottesville on Halloween. Appropriate date.
Appropriate, yes.
And we of course, had a beer exchange. And one of the ones I was really impressed with was an Oktoberfest that Will brought from a brewery in Minnesota known as Surly. Well, I was so impressed. It is truly, and anybody listening, it is the best Oktoberfest you will find. It is. That's the way I had it. But it's like, well, I'll never have that again. Wrong. Surly has made it down here to Florida. And I've been taking my tour of this brewery with their Furious Red IPA. It is just outstanding. You know, the extra Citra Pale Ale is really good. That's a nice hot weather beer. Mm-hmm. And right now, as we've been doing this podcast, I have been drinking their Cynical Ale, 16-ounce can here with 6.5% APV. It has a really nice finish to it. And had a spaghetti and meatballs for dinner tonight. And I got to tell you, it's a nice chaser for that. And thank you, Will, for putting me in such a bad mood. It never tasted so good. So folks, if you find some Surly beer nearby, it certainly has Will and my stamp of approval on that.
Mm-hmm. And you next, you need to take that trip to hell.
I'm not going to touch that.
No, it's the name of a... Well, speaking of Chris, so you've already stayed there, so...
He's been and back. Yep.
I want that contract back.
Did it freeze over, though?
No, and it never will.
only if you put it in the fridge.
I'm enjoying some Shiner cold brew coffee ale because I like dark beers, and it's rather tasty. That's going to wrap it up for another episode. We're on episode number 60, and I want to thank the guys, and also...
Oh,
yes.
One more quick point.
Yeah.
It would be remiss if we didn't wish the ACC happy birthday on their 64th birthday as of today, on the recording of this podcast.
How about that? Been around for a while. Good quality
sports.
It's almost
time to retire. Good.
Now they're going
to light the candle.
For Chris Bond and Will Ogen, and I'm Jim Quist.
Cool. Slanka.